It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. We're here now, the Pirate Preview, East Carolina versus USF. First from LaGrange is Kyle from LaGrange. What's up, dude?
What's going on, David?
And happy evening to you. And we're with us now from China Grove is Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, man?
Hey, how's it going, Dave? Good to be here. Looking forward to talking Pirate football, among other things.
We got a lot of, the late, great Burt Reynolds, a long way to go and a short time to get there. So we'll do one for the Bandit tonight. And we'll start off with the Pirate Roundtable as we're going to talk about Pirate news. Lots to talk about. And where do you guys want to start? There's so many things, topics. Where do you want to
I want to start here. I'll go ahead and get this out of the way. Sad news today about Trayvon Brown's mother losing her home in the Wilmington area during Hurricane Florence.
That's awful.
And yes, terrible news. A thoughts and prayers to Trayvon and his family and during this time. Obviously no loss of life, so that's great, and hopefully her home was insured, but it's terrible news, and I'm sorry to hear that, and hopefully Trayvon and his family are dealing with it. And just thoughts and prayers to Trayvon and his family right now.
And you know something? We're Pirates, and I haven't mentioned this to you guys, so I don't know if we can or cannot. Is it against NCAA rules to help out, even if we're Pirate fans, we help out Trayvon Brown's mom, like a GoFundMe page or whatever, to help raise money to build a house?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know. My gut would tell me that it would probably be smart to have someone who isn't a Pirate Club member start the GoFundMe, and then probably it would be okay to donate there too. I'm not sure. That's something that somebody can find out. If you're out there listening and you can find that out, let us know. And that's definitely a good idea.
Yeah, that would be a good question for my good buddy, fellow Pirate, Hank Harewood, who's actually in compliance at UNC Charlotte. I could ask him, or that's always something you could contact the Pirate Club about, and they would be able to tell you.
When you guys told me that before we started the podcast a couple hours ago, we were going over our notes, and I didn't know anything about it. I missed that. That was the first thing that came to mind. I was thinking, we're Pirates. We need to help his mother. And then it dawned on me that I don't want it to become across where it hurts us. That's what's sad about, I'm not going on a tangent about, we don't have time about the NCAA, but there should be exceptions when something like this happens that we shouldn't even have to think about that, you know?
No.
We're not trying to gain his access or pay him or do anything like that. We were trying to help him out. So that's something that we'll look into, and I'll definitely get back to you guys an answer on that. We'll find out between the three of us. We'll find out if we can do that or if somebody else can start the GoFundMe page. But I really want to help his mother out, and however we can help her, if it's through different organizations or we get the right people to help her or whatever. We're Pirates, and we're family from Eastern North Carolina, and let's help her out. All right. Very sad there, and hopefully that we'll have a positive. I'm glad that there's no loss of life, but I just want to say, guys, with all the loss of life, all the destruction that was done, our hearts and prayers go out to the people in Eastern North Carolina right now that are suffering, and hopefully we can all lift them up, and definitely we're Eastern North Carolina strong, and let's definitely help them out any way we can. I know that that was sad news, but we've had also a lot of good news. And I want to first mention how much I love, most people know how much I love Cliff Godwin and the baseball team. I want to get you guys your reaction on the, thanks to Steve Inigo, an excellent job on Hoist the Colors. He had the breakdown of the contract. Did you guys get a chance to see the contract, the new contract for Cliff Godwin?
I did. Yeah, that's a hefty baseball contract. That would be competitive, I'm assuming, with just about anybody's baseball contract in the country. I would venture to say, if he's not the highest paid baseball coach in the American, he's got to be at the top three.
He is.
Okay.
That's correct.
It's a hefty contract. I think he's proven to be worth the money. I'm glad that's a contract that should keep him here. He should have no reason to leave East Carolina for another job unless he just gets the itch to go, you know, coach in the SEC or something financially. And also at East Carolina, you can win it. You can compete for a national championship in baseball. So Cliff deserves it. He earns it. He has earned it. Glad to see his time up. How many years is that contract for?
What he got is a 1-year extension. His previous deal went through, I think it was 2022, and now his extension added 1 year onto that, so it goes through the 2023 season. And then also, and as Dave said on hoistthecolors.net, Stephen Igo has an excellent article where he spells everything out and has all the numbers and how the salary increases on an annual basis.
Yeah.
But the first year of the contract, his new deal will pay him $375,000 base, which is an increase of $95,000 from the $280,000 previously.
It's funny, when I was thinking $400,000 and then I saw it was $375,000, so that was before I even saw the article. I was wondering if it would go up to $400,000, so I was only $25,000 off. It was just a lucky guess on my part. What the bonus would be. I mean, not the bonus, but the increase of the base salary.
His base salary is not too far off from what Montgomery's base salary is now. Montgomery also has a lot of other things in his contract that gets him up to over $1 million. But that's really excellent for a college baseball coach to be making close to $400,000.
Yeah, but you know, like you said, Kyle, he's definitely earned it, and the baseball program is very consistent. And now we have a chance where we can actually create, because he actually put in there also for the assistants to get bonuses, the assistants to get raises. And so kudos to Cliff for looking out for the assistants too. I was going to say, sometimes the coaches don't take care of their fellow coaches like they should. And he's smart to keep the team, and when I say team, the team of coaches, if you will, intact. So great job there.
No, definitely. Glad to see that got a raise in there for assistance.
By the way, Kyle, one question you had is, when does the basketball schedule come out? The basketball schedule came out today.
The basketball schedule is out, and there's some. I guess most of these games were scheduled before Coach Dooley got here, so most of these were scheduled under your previous administration. There's some interesting non-conference games: James Madison and Appalachian State, Charlotte at Georgia Tech. But there's also some of the not so exciting games like Maryland Eastern Shore and University of Texas Rio Grande or something like that.
Valley, yes.
Yeah, UT, RGV, and good note about that game, guys, is that former ECU assistant coach, who was an assistant at ECU under Joe Dooley, Lou Hill, is the head coach of UT, RGV.
Okay, that explains that. Prairie View A&M, I don't know. I like some of it. I love the Appalachian State. I love JMU. I always love Charlotte and Wilmington. There was a lot of speculation that we were going to have Rutgers coming to Greenville this year. So that is disappointing that we don't have the Scarlet Knights on the home schedule. When you factor in the conference schedule, it's not a bad, it's definitely an improvement over last year.
Oh my God. Yes.
You know, no non-conference home game that's going to make you want to go buy tickets. There's no sexy non-conference home game, but there's some fun ones in there. And like I said, certainly the conference schedule is always appealing.
I want to get your feeling real quick. What do you think about, I told you guys ahead of time, do you have an idea, looking at the schedule, just first glance, what do you think prediction-wise, what do you think the Pirates are going to do? I know we don't have a lot of time, but I just want to get a quick take from each of you as far as wins and losses.
I wouldn't begin to guess. Basketball is not my forte in terms of expertise. I do think, you know, anytime you have a coaching change, sometimes you're going to have a learning curve and some growing pains. But with the staff Dooley's put together, you would like to think we would do well with that non-conference schedule. I don't want to guess a record. I'll say right around 500.
All right. Bubba, what do you think?
I'd say taking a look at it, and you have the 12 non-conference games, and nine of those are at Minji's. The three road games are at Georgia Tech, UNC Wilmington, and Charlotte, if I'm not mistaken. So three quality road games. And I think taking a look at it, with the first three games being at home, all three of which are games that we probably should definitely win, starting with Delaware State, I think we'll win at least eight of those ball games and may win as many as 9 or 10.
All right. And what about conference?
As far as the league goes, you know, we were talking about it earlier, and I know you said that you think they'll win 6 out of 18, so 6 and 12 in the league. I can see something. I think you're probably pretty accurate with that, with where our current roster is. Now, I could see it going a game or two. I mean, I could see us maybe being 7-11 or 8-10 in a best-case scenario, but I'd be surprised if we flirted with the 500 mark this year.
What do you think about the tournament, the AAC tournament?
You know, when you look at the American Athletic Conference tournament, that's something that we actually performed very well in, relatively speaking, under Jeff Lebo. Now, obviously, we never won it, but when we would typically win a game, and then sometimes we would win a couple ball games to make it to the semis. So I wouldn't be surprised at all to see that success continue under this new coaching staff.
I'm looking at, when I looked at the schedule out of the 12 non-conference, I know the reason why I said the high number that I did, when I told you guys, I told you that I feel like they're going to win 10 non-conference games. I think they're going to pretty much win everything at home, or a good number of them. And I don't know how they'll do on the road, but I say 10 non-conference games. The American Athletic Conference is just really tough for us right now. I want to think that we can win more, Bubba and Kyle, than the 6. I'm going to give Dooley some slack this year. I think with they may do better than what I think. But so that's 10 non-conference games, 6 conference games. And judging by our past, I'm going to go with one win in the conference tournament. And that'll give you 17-15. We'll have a winning record and a great way to start the Joe Dooley era with a winning record and 17 wins. That's where I'm going. What do you think, Kyle? Can you buy that?
Well, I mean, I'm sure, that's not too unrealistic. 17 wins would be a great start to the Joe Dooley era for sure. Do we take the CBI invitation?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think any kind of postseason tournament, people don't understand that I remember I had coworkers who were giving me a hard time about 2013. And I said, you don't understand, being somebody from East Carolina, basketball is so off the radar. The fact that we're in a tournament and we won it, and we were the last team standing in North Carolina, I'll take it. And, you know, you can call it a crappy tournament or whatever, but I was really happy. And that was, to me, the 2013 and then 2014 were the last two good seasons for Jeff Lebo. And I'm not anti-Lebo. I just think, personally, there was a lot of health issues in the last couple of years. So
I know in the American, we are not allowed to go to the CIT. I am not sure about the CBI.
I didn't know that.
Yes, I think we can go to the CBI, I believe. I'm almost positive, but I do know we are not allowed to go to the CIT.
I believe you're right on that, Kyle, but I'm not 100%.
Okay. Oh, what about the CBI?
Right, yeah. I knew that as far as once you join the AAC, the CIT was out the window, but I believe the CBI still may be an option, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I
learned that. I'm a huge basketball fan, but I did not know that nugget. So that's why I'm doing the podcast with two bright individuals that know way more than I do. So I appreciate you dudes very, very much.
One more thing, sorry to interrupt, Dave, but about the basketball schedule before we move on, because I know there are plenty of other things we need to talk about. But as far as the basketball schedule goes, my thoughts are this, and this is just my hunch. Obviously, a lot of the schedule's in place when Joe Dooley took over. my thinking is that App State game in Greenville, and then potentially the JMU game. I know we played them up there under Jeff Lebo, so that may have already been on the docket. But then also that game at Georgia Tech. So you have App State and then at Georgia Tech. I think those regional-type matchups like that, in-state and regional, whether it's Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, et cetera, I think those are the games that you're going to see more of under Joe Dooley right. and this regime as opposed to the Prairie View A&Ms, Delaware States, et cetera.
You know, why don't, and then we'll get off of this, but just a random question. Why don't we ever play Coastal Carolina in anything anymore? You know, Coastal's had a decent basketball program in recent history, and right. we're in the Sun Belt now, and God knows they got great baseball in the national championship.
Cliff Ellis has done a tremendous job football. There in basketball.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand and why we don't ever, they just moved to the FBS and football league, and I don't understand why we don't play the Chanticleers in anything. Let's start, you know, if you don't want to play them in football just yet, I guess that's okay, even though I wouldn't mind it. A trip to Myrtle Beach in September is not bad. But let's at least play them in basketball, and in baseball, it needs to happen.
Yes.
God knows. In baseball, it should happen. But anyway, that's another story for a different time. Got too much to talk about.
Well, we definitely have plenty of podcasts to come, and we have to talk about that. Interesting thing, too, guys. I want to get your take on it, and I'm not trying to beat a dead horse. I'm really not. I'm just trying to get clarity on this, and I want y'all to help me out with this. But that's what's great about the podcast, if we can get clarity. Bubba, help me on this. There was an article in the Roanoke Times, right? Roanoke, Virginia, which right. is right near Blacksburg.
And we'll put that on our social media. It's been out there, but we'll retweet it again. It's on Roanoke.com, which is Roanoke.com is the site for the Roanoke Times.
Okay. And they had a writer, and my understanding is, let me be very clear on this. And we want to make, we, on this show, we work really hard to give you distinctions, meaning where, give credit where credit's due, with the, where we heard the information, like our good buddy Steve and I go at hoistthecolors.net. Awesome dude. We appreciate him. The very first guest ever on this podcast. So he's always going to be very special to not only myself, but all of us. So you have Hoist the Colors, we give credit for. But you're looking at this particular case. Wanted to make sure that people understand. I don't know that this is Virginia Tech. Maybe it's just speculation. We're not sure. But there was an article talking about where Virginia Tech could go after $250,000 for a breach of contract for not playing the game. And I want to get your take, guys. Do you think it's really Virginia Tech's trying to do this? Or do you think that was just maybe a guy trying to sell newspapers? I'm just being honest. I'm a member of the media. Anybody can tell you that when you're in the member of the media, you provoke emotion.
Well, you know, based on Nitwit, Babcock's initial reaction, I could see why the writer would go with that spin if he was spinning it. Because, you know, Babcock's initial reaction, you know, he acted like a baby and threw a fit on social media. So I don't know. It can be either way. Now, you think if he sees the catastrophe, the disaster that has happened in North Carolina.
Oh, my God.
As a result of the hurricane, if he pursues anything like that, it will be a public relations nightmare for Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
So if you want to do it, Hokies, go ahead and do it, because you're going to look like a bunch of idiots.
And we don't feel that way. That's something that you would expect from a rival team, and not.
I wouldn't expect it from anybody, honestly, David. Anybody. I hope it's just spin from some jackleg reporter in Roanoke. Yeah, but like I say, because of his initial reaction, their AD, I get why the writer would go with that spin. It's a good question. I can tell you they wouldn't get the $250,000. What they need to be doing is donating $250,000 to the hurricane victims down here.
Well, you know what's funny is you guys, I don't think I've shared this before. You guys know me personally, and that's what my degree in. It's not underwater basket weaving from East Carolina, believe it or not. It's political science. Although there's things recently in politics in the last year or two that I would rather have an underwater basket weaving degree, but the reason I bring that up is Kyle, you bring an excellent point, is that anytime you're in politics, you're looking for the spin, you're looking for this particular case, damage control. And if you're the Hokies, why not give money to the North Carolina Disaster Relief Fund? There's United Way, Samaritan's Purse, there's the North Carolina Baptist Men, Red Cross. There's a whole bunch of stuff that, and you can actually come down here and volunteer, bring your teams, all kinds of cool stuff that they could do to help out Eastern North Carolina. It's not even about East Carolina. It's about Eastern North Carolina, right, guys?
You know, absolutely. And I hope this is a non-issue. To your question, whether we thought it was the writer from Roanoke or if that was really something Virginia Tech was pursuing, I don't know. I don't even know why it was discussed. Even Fuente's answer, if you go back and read it, was like, he said something to the effect, I wish this was something I could give you more details about, but, you know, the administration have been talking about our options. I don't get the big deal. You know, there was a bunch of teams in the Carolinas and Virginia that canceled games. Yeah, these are the only, Virginia Tech's the only ones acting like we did something wrong. I mean, I don't get it. Bubba, what are your thoughts on it?
I'm saying my gut says that I think that you're right from the standpoint that the writer from the Roanoke Times probably put that spin on it as far as just the initial social media and everything that went down there. But my gut just says that I think with the positive relationship that, or at least from what we know in the public that we've had with Virginia Tech, that they don't have any intentions of trying to get that 250.
And here's another thing. I'm going to use what the young kids say. I think that Mr. Babcock was butthurt. I think he was upset because he actually wanted to make a decision on Wednesday, and he didn't allow him to make that decision. And so because we didn't play the game of chicken anymore with a hurricane, then that's what he's upset about. I don't even think it's really about a football game as much as it is that he was in charge and he was going to make the decision whether or not we played the football game. And finally we said, hey, enough is enough. I'm waiting for Monday, Tuesday morning. And then it was Wednesday morning. And so that's why a decision was made. And by the way, Kyle, you had a great point. We were talking about have a lot of conference calls. We love each other that much. And you were talking about, was it Middle Tennessee State? I want to give you credit because didn't they offer teams from the Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina to play there because they had to win a game?
Chris Childers on
that's right, it was Chris Childers.
On Full Ride, on XM Satellite Radio, him and Rick Neuheisel, had the athletic director from Middle Tennessee on and asked him on the show, because of Vandy letting Virginia and the Ohio Bobcats play at their stadium, being there a similar location, close to the Carolinas and Virginia also, like Vandy, if being they were on the road, if a team could use their stadium at Murfreesboro. And he said, absolutely, any teams that need to use our stadium that are going to be affected by the hurricane are more than welcome. Please feel free to contact, me, being the AD at Middle. So, if Virginia Tech really wanted to play the game that bad, they could have moved it over to Murfreesboro, Virginia, or Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and we could have played it there. And then we would have been able to leave from there to Florida without any problems. And,
right.
It's a decision needed to be made. And I was told also today, I don't know if it's true or not, maybe you guys heard this, is Dave Hart actually ended up making that call.
He did.
So that is true. Okay.
Yes, he did.
Dave Hart made that call, so good on him.
You know, and I wanted to say, too, to add to this, guys, that when Virginia Tech fans say there was a athletic.com, their writer had an excellent reaction initially about, he said, Virginia Tech, he said, in other words, be careful, because, about the whole hurricane before this hell happened. And there are some people on there that are just totally ridiculous about they don't get anything out of playing us. And I would say the last 2 years, you've got to win. We're pretty much like a cupcake to you. the last couple of years where he can, you know, win 64-13 or 64-17 or whatever it is. So you got a win out of it. So at least, you know, you got that. I think the thing that drives me crazy is this ACC. This is one area where the ACC people need to listen to me. And that is East Carolina is well deserving to be in a Power Five conference. You can look at everything about us and we're deserving of it. Whether we'll get in one or not, who knows?
We're in one. We're in a power conference.
Oh, I know that. I'm just saying, I'm talking about their reality and perception and reality thing. And for them to say that, act like we're a cupcake, like a small school. I mean, last time I checked, oh, by the way, we are the second largest state school in North Carolina, the second biggest school, period, in North Carolina. So don't mistake anybody, these people that when we play baseball, you know, the ESPN announcers talking about how we're a small school. And it's just ridiculous how we have that stepsister, you know, we're not Cinderella, we're a stepsister kind of thing. And Virginia Tech is, unfortunately, now that they're in the ACC, they're buying into the narrative. We don't get anything out of playing them. And they're lucky to be able to play us, all this kind of crap. And that's one thing that I will say, that please, Virginia Tech, now that you're in the ACC.
Yeah, now that they're in the ACC. They're
that narrative.
Right. It's nonsense. It's the whole thing Carolina and NC State says. Yet,
we
you
can't
know,
play you.
Yet we beat them all the time.
That's
Carolina,
why they don't
NC want State
you.
In particularly. And we've had our fair share of wins over Virginia Tech over the years. So, look, it is what it is. They're on the schedule for a few years to come. The games will be played. Just Whip Babcock is an egomaniac, evidently. And, he got his feelings hurt because Dave Hart made the call and, he thought it was his call. And, it is what it is. And, you know, what I'm more concerned is what we're going to do with that, with the 4-12 game. Are we going to play an FCS opponent? Are we going to wait and see what happens and play a game December 1st? Are we going to play a game the open weekend? Or are we going to only play 11 games? That's what I'm working.
Let's go get the money in Nebraska. $1.1 million. We'll put it towards the $3.2 million of debt. It's probably going to be more. Let's take the money and run, like Steve Miller would say. Let's take the money and go to Lincoln, Nebraska, and play Scott Frost.
Hey, you never know. You might come back with a dub as well.
Potentially. And they're not lighting it up these days. But then Troy is a quality football team.
Right, and I didn't mean that as a knock on Troy, because, yeah, Troy, that didn't surprise me at all that Troy won that football game.
Guys, do we have guests this week?
Yes, we do. Kyle, we do have great guests. In fact, Bubba, we have, this week is going to be tremendous. We have three great guests, and let's talk about who they are. We'll promote them, and then we've got a special report from Bubba. So, Bubba, take it away. Tell about the guest today.
Yeah, we're going to be talking with Jim Lauk, who's the longtime play-by-play voice. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe he's the only play-by-play voice in USF football history.
That's
so
correct.
I believe their program started right around 1989, something like that. So he's the only play-by-play voice they've ever had. So that's pretty neat. And we'll be talking with him about this weekend's matchup. And then we'll also be talking with Bethany Bradshaw, very well-known author in the Greenville area and ECU Pirate fan. That's what she wrote, Keith LeClair's book. And also did a book on 50 years of the Super Bowl a few years ago when Super Bowl 50 was being played. Imagine that. And then she did some books related to ACC basketball with well-known coach Everett Case for North Carolina and NC State. Yes,
she's tremendous. And also we got a series we're going to start because we've got a lot of great Pirates. So we have our great Pirate series this week, a great look at the Pirate Jeff Barber, right, Bubba? He's actually the new AD at Charleston Southern. He's not new when it comes to the AD business.
Right. Jeff's an ECU alum. He got his start as a student, and then he, of course, worked with the Pirate Club and then moved on to Furman, South Carolina. Of course, was AD at Liberty, did a heck of a job there, and now he's off to a strong start down in Charleston, at Charleston Southern.
All right, and let's now, Bubba, you know that one of the things we want to give a lot of love, because We're covering all the Pirate sports as best we can, and we've got a lot of cover with the big three of football, basketball, and baseball. But we also want to give a love. There's a lot of great things going on in Olympic sports, and each week we're going to give a love to between coaches. And, Bubba, I know that you're going to be doing a Olympic sports report every week, and take it away. What's going on in the world of Olympic sports?
Yeah, like you said, we just want to give some love to those teams. Obviously, they're Pirates as well, do a tremendous job academically and athletically for ECU. So, yeah, rightfully so, we have so much coverage for football, men's basketball, baseball, and like you said, so many folks love those. But we're going to start off taking a look at women's soccer. First-year head coach Jason Hamilton came to ECU from Mississippi State. I believe his wife is an ECU alum. Anyway, he replaced longtime head coach Rob Donenworth, who resigned after last season. But last year, we were 6-10-2. But this year, under first-year coach Jason Hamilton, we're off to a 5-1-2 start. The lone loss was a 2-1 decision at George Mason. Right now, ECU's on a two-game win streak, and we're going to be taking that into the conference opener at Tulsa tomorrow evening. And they'll continue that road trip with the game at Memphis on Sunday at 1 p.m. And senior Courtney Cash right now is the team's leader with 5 goals.
We're going to try to talk more about the different sports, but I want to let folks know next Tuesday we're going to have both Jason Hamilton of the women's soccer team. I had Cliff Godwin on my mind there for a second, but the women's soccer team, tremendous guy. We'll be talking to him, and we also have planning on having Julie Torbett as well. So we'll give love to volleyball and women's soccer. And Julie Torbett's done an incredible job. And I know, Kyle, you're a big fan of her and the volleyball team, right?
Absolutely. You got to get behind volleyball for sure. And
absolutely.
Julie Torbett is a great coach, and I understand she enjoys my calls on Pirate Radio during the fifth quarter call-in show. So I'm glad to hear Julie's a fan of me, and I'm a fan of her.
Oh yeah, I was just going to say, as far as Julie Torbett goes, just a tremendous job she's done, turned around our volleyball program. That's what, when she took over a 2 or 3 win team, and that's what, last year had a tremendous season. This year we're off to a 7-3 start. We did lose our last match where we suffered a 3-0 defeat to Charlotte, but prior to that we had won 5 straight matches by a 3-0 score. And we did lose 3 games. Let me rephrase that. We didn't lose 3 games. We were unable to play 3 games up in Williamsburg, Virginia. At a tournament that William and Mary had. But, obviously that was due to Hurricane Florence. They'll be opening AAC play on Friday when Cincinnati comes to Williams Arena, Menchie's Coliseum for a 7 p.m. start. And then you have swimming and diving that's always successful. They've captured multiple American Athletic Conference championships. They're going to be getting cranked up with their first meet on October 5th when UNC comes to the Menchie's Natatorium for a 5 p.m. start. You have the men's and women's cross countries teams that started with a heck of a showing, and both of them winning the event down at the Carolina Classic. That's an event hosted in Columbia, South Carolina. So that Carolina, just to clarify, you had the women's golf team who performed well in their first tournament up at the Minnesota Invitational. And get this, guys, Carly Cox, a junior from right here in China Grove, she was our top individual. She finished tied for 9th with an even par total of 217. The men had their first tournament back a little over a week ago. They played in the Rod Meyers Invitational, which was hosted by Duke, and their next tournament's going to be here the beginning of next week, about a week from now, September 24th and 25th at the Old Town Collegiate Invitational hosted by Wake Forest. And then women's tennis and men's tennis, they'll be getting underway here in the next week or so. They had their first tournaments canceled, unfortunately, due to Hurricane Florence.
All right. Well, Bubba, I know each week you're going to be doing that for us here on a podcast, our Olympic Sports Report with Bubba Rosenbaum. Excellent job, my friend. ECUPirates.com for more information. And you can get tickets for all these great teams and matches. Let's go out and support them. at 1-800-DIAL-ECU, or again, ecupirates.com. We had a chance to actually sit down with Jim Loud. He's an outstanding, great guy, and appreciate him coming on. We want to get the Bulls' perspective. We were talking about guests. Well, he's a great one. He's been actually the play-by-play voice. He's been there since 1983. And let's go to that interview with him and find out more about USF and the matchup with ECU and USF this Saturday night.
Here on the Sports Objective Podcast, with us right now, Jim Loud. He's the Associate Director of Athletics for Video Production and Broadcasting, a play-by-play voice for the Bulls. Jim, thanks so much for being with us.
Sure, no problem.
I know that you've actually been here since 1983, a great team here for USF this year, going 3-0 so far with the Bulls. What can the Pirates and Pirate fans expect out of USF this week?
Well, it's a little hard to project, to be honest with you. They've had some nice victories early. They beat both Georgia Tech and Illinois by being down double digits in the fourth quarter, and each of the last 2 weeks were able to come back both times. They really played well their first couple of games, and then last week in Illinois, even though they were able to come up with a road win, I think there was some disappointment on how they played, some things that kind of plagued them last year that hadn't shown up in the first couple of games this year suddenly reappeared against Illinois. They committed 14 penalties. They had a lot of pre-snap penalties and really shot themselves in the foot a couple of times and probably could have avoided putting themselves in the position of being down late in that game. But the good news was, you know, they made some plays late and were able to come back and beat a Big Ten team on the road. So you can't be too unhappy with that.
No, you can't. I know coming off a 10-win season last year, I love the coach, your coach with Charlie Strong. No pun intended. Do you feel like with having Charlie Strong, is the team and the program getting stronger?
Well, I think it's becoming more his team and his program than it was a year ago. You know, USF had almost two dozen seniors graduate after that 10-2 team last year. So there are some returnees in key roles, but there's a lot of new faces this year. There's a lot of freshmen that are not only on the two deep, but also getting significant playing time. So I think the team and the program are taking on a little bit more of Coach Strong's characteristics. He also returned his coaching staff intact, and that was a key part of preparation for this year, is having all the coaches back in the same positions and same duties as they were in 2017. So, you know, you look at his USF tenure, he's 13-2. It's not a bad place to be.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as recruiting goes, I know that one thing I know about Charlie Strong, he's a great recruiter. Great coach. How are things looking ahead for the Bulls as far as recruiting in years to come?
Well, you know, I think the proof of it, at least coming into this year, was the number of young guys that are playing, so that's certainly encouraging. It's obviously a very crowded recruiting field in the state of Florida. You've got to deal with Florida, Florida State, Miami, but now you've got Lane Kiffin down at FIU. You've got Butch Davis at Florida International, so there's a lot of people chasing players. The good news is it's such a great high school football state, and the Tampa Bay area in particular has so much talent in it. If you look at the Bulls roster, a really disproportionate amount of their roster is from right here in the Tampa Bay area. So they feel if they can keep some guys at home, they're going to be okay year after year.
No doubt about it. In fact, you were talking about all the Florida schools, the war on I-4. UCF is another team that comes to mind with everything going on there. As far as the team goes this year, are there players, what players stand out this year to you as far as, we'll start with the offensive side of the ball?
Well, the quarterback, certainly Blake Barnett, came in, didn't join the program until May, and it's really hard to win the starting job at quarterback when you're not here for spring ball.
Right.
They had to find someone, of course, to replace Quentin Flowers, who was a four-year starter and really an iconic figure in USF football history. They had a three-way battle for it. They didn't announce that Barnett was the guy until a couple of days before the opening game, but he's been terrific. You know, he's a true 6'5", has much better mobility than people give him credit for, and a big arm and really good leadership qualities, and has shown a good decision-making process in the first three games. So he's probably at the top of the list offensively. Certainly Jordan Cronkrite, the running back, transfer from Florida, had to sit out last year on transfer rules, but had a 100-yard rushing game last week against Illinois. And then the receiving core is pretty talented between Darnell Salomon, had a couple of touchdowns in last week's game. Terrence Horn, who had the two kickoff return for touchdowns against Georgia Tech. Some really, really great talent there. Randall St. Felix, a true freshman, has had a couple of 100-yard receiving games. And maybe the most impressive guy of all in the wide receiver ranks is the 240-pound slot receiver, Tyree McCants, leads the team in receptions. Then you throw in tight end Mitchell Wilcox, had 8 catches last week. So there's a lot of weapons for Barnett to throw to, and that's really been the best part of USF's offense so far.
Looking at the defensive side of the ball, are things better this year for the Bulls?
I think it's probably too early to say. They've made some plays. They've forced some turnovers at very opportune moments, but they've given up a lot of rushing yards. You know, of course, they had to face the triple option rushing attack of Georgia Tech, and it's hard to come out with a decent number of yards against on the ground against that attack, but Illinois ran the ball pretty well on them as well. So they still got some things to figure out, I think, in terms of run defense. But one of the things this defense does very well is they just run sideline to sideline. They have tremendous speed. Their linebackers, Khalid McGee and Nico Sautel, are probably, in fairness, a little undersized, but they really get to the football. They can get to any spot on the field. Both of them make a lot of tackles. So I think the talent is definitely there. The team speed stands out. They've been pretty good against the pass, but they've got some things to figure out defending the run.
Jim, I wanted to ask you, with you've been around the league for all the time, and I know Big East, and now with American. In fact, I didn't realize you'd been there. I knew you'd been there a good while. I didn't know it was since 1983 with the Bulls. But with your take on the league, do you think it comes down to the East with UCF and USF, another World Night Four?
You know, there's a lot of things pointing that way, but it's so I got out of the predicting game a long time ago, to be honest with you, because I wasn't right very much. There's just so many things that can happen with injuries, with, you know, playing a game where you think on paper you're in good shape, but then the matchups really don't work in your favor and you get a surprise result. It's really hard to say. I think certainly talent-wise, USF and UCF are the teams that catch your attention in this side of the division. But then again, you know, go look at what Cincinnati's done the first couple of weeks. Yeah. Nobody expected that. Nobody expected UCF to rip through the league undefeated 2 years after they didn't win a single game. So it's very, very hard to project, and especially this early on, I don't know if I'd want to go out on a limb too much.
Well, you probably understand why I'm not a betting man. I don't bet on sports and bet period, because I lose way more than I could ever win. As far as the fan base goes with the Bulls, how are their reaction? They've got to love having Charlie Strong.
You know, he's a well-known name. It's fascinating to watch people react to him when we do his radio show every Thursday night. You know, we do it at one of the local restaurants not far from campus, and he's gotten in the habit now of taking one full segment off the air just to accommodate pictures and autographs and visiting with the fans. So people are drawn to him. You know, They're waiting for that first conference championship that's eluded the USF football program throughout its history. The guy who, whoever it is, the guy who brings that is going to be pretty popular in his own right. But people do really respond to Coach Strong, no doubt about it.
Well, looks like a great season for the Bulls. And by the way, I want to tell fans to make sure they check out your website, GoUSFBulls.com, and we're going to keep our eye on things, of course, loving the league. Good luck to the Bulls this week against the Pirates. And, Jim, you've been a trooper. Thank you so much for spending time with us. I know you're very busy getting ready for the game on Saturday night.
Sure, no problem.
Appreciate him, guys. He was tremendous. He actually is very knowledgeable, of course, about not only USF, but he's got a big-time take of college football and being around. Only play-by-play voice, as you mentioned, Bubba, 1983. He's like the Jeff Charles for USF, been there a long time and even longer than Jeff has, and by a number of seasons. And those guys, unfortunately, are a dying breed. Other guys seem to jump around more. But kudos to Jim. Appreciate him. He was a great guest, and he actually was very busy this week and gave us time. So I wanted to give him some love and wanted to talk a couple minutes on the game. We've got so many guests and so little time. So give your take on the game, guys. What do you think is going to happen this week?
It's going to be tough. South Florida's good. They struggled a little bit on the scoreboard, found a way to beat Illinois. They dominated the game statistically, but it was, you know, they had to come back in the fourth quarter to win that ball game. But they are 3-0. I think what I'm hoping to see is us play a motivated football game, us play to the level we played against Carolina, come out, execute on all three sides of the ball, and have a chance to win it in the fourth quarter. That's what I hope to see. I'm going to take South Florida to win it on the road down there. But I'm going to be positive and say we play well and lose by two touchdowns or less.
You must be reading my mind. That was, I think, the wasn't the line at one point 21 and a half?
It actually opened to 24. It's down to 21 and a half.
Okay. I agree with you, Kyle, wholeheartedly. Last week I picked the Pirates over North Carolina. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think that last year was not a competitive game at all. I think this game at Raymond James Stadium, I think we lose by, I was saying two touchdowns. I'm hoping that for a win, but I'm going to go with USF over East Carolina by, again, two touchdowns. But, hey, we want to see the team be competitive and win. And if they have a shot to win, who knows? But I think reality will sink in and we'll lose the game. But I hope I'm wrong. And, Bubba, what do you think?
I'm actually on the same page with you guys as well. And folks, we actually did not talk about this prior to the podcast. Yeah. So we had no idea what each other was going to say. But, yeah. Right. And, I'm going to say a couple years ago in Coach Moe's first year, we went down there. The score didn't look like it was all that competitive, but you guys remember early in the fourth quarter, maybe midway through the fourth quarter, that game was very much in doubt, and we had a chance to made quite a comeback to put us in position to potentially win that ball game, but we're unable to do so. And I could see things kind of unfolding the same way, not necessarily getting behind and then having to come back, but I could see us being nip and tuck through three quarters or three quarters plus, and just not being able to pull it out, getting maybe worn down a little bit in the fourth quarter. But because when you look at USF, I do think they're going to pose a much stronger challenge for our defense. And I think when you look at it, yeah, they lost Quincy Flowers at quarterback. Excuse me, Quentin Flowers. And in addition to some strong running backs, I think D'Ernest Johnson and maybe another. But when you look at
24 seniors, by the way, guys.
Yeah, and Charlie Strong inherited a tremendous group last year. But Blake Barnett, he's been very good so far. He's thrown three picks, but he's thrown seven touchdowns, thrown for a little under 1,000 yards, threw for over 400 against Illinois.
Cronkite, the running back, had a nice day against the Illini, ran for about 140. And then they had two 100-yard receivers, one of which was their tight end, Wilcox. And they also had St. Felix, who had, I think, about 120 yards. And he had a really long touchdown in that one, I think, of probably 50 or 60 yards. So they have excellent skill players, like Coach Mose alluded to in his weekly teleconference. And so I think when you look at it, the defense hopefully will continue to see improvement. I think we will. But we're going to need to see what we saw in the first half against UNC. I don't think we're going to come out and put up a goose egg against an offense of this caliber. And hopefully the offense will continue to play like it did against UNC, and we won't need to. But when you really take a look at it, in that first half against UNC, we allowed – what about 315, 320 yards of offense? And we bent a lot, but we didn't break. All right. We forced four field goals, and that's what we're going to have to force USF to kick field goals on Saturday. And if we do that, we'll have a chance to pull off the upset. But, if I had to pick, I think USF will win this game by probably 10 to 14 points, something like that.
All right, and Bubba, I know we've got our next guest. Let's go to Bethany Bratcher. She is on Bonesville.net, a great author, and you get all her books, by the way, on Amazon.com and locally. I know some of them are at UBE, and even just to contact her, she would love to sell you books as well. Let's go to our interview. We sat down with Bethany this week. Let's talk to her.
We're here on the Sports Objective Podcast, a very special guest, honored to have Bethany Bratcher, a great columnist, freelance writer. We'll be talking about her career. And certainly all that. And by the way, welcome in, Bethany. Interesting week for the Pirates.
Yes, Dave, certainly. It's kind of weird to not have them here on the premises and trying to do pregame coverage and figure out what's going on from a distance. We've been here before.
Yeah, we have. I know that I met you, I actually saw you on the practice field a few weeks ago, my very first practice, and appreciate Tom McClellan, everybody inviting me out. I guess that means I'm an official member of the media now, which is a great thing. I can add that to my resume, I guess. But wanted to bring you in because it's an interesting week. It feels very weird not to be at the practice field. Like, normally I'd be going there today and maybe tomorrow. And here we are at Bagel Man in Greenville recording this interview instead of being at the practice field.
It's a little odd. I actually just came from the ECU soccer practice field. I figured I'd go to some practice field that I could find that was active, and that was fun. They were gone too, but they got back yesterday, and they're about to leave for their first two conference games. Tomorrow they're leaving for Tulsa, and then they'll travel to Memphis. So I got to see some athletes in action.
Wanted to ask you, this is a very interesting time for East Carolina. It's not like this is our first rodeo with Hurricanes. But it, we'll get into the controversy a little bit because you're a journalist. I want to get your take on it. But you were telling me right before we started the interview that your career started with, interesting enough, with East Carolina and Floyd when you moved here in 1999, or right before that, right?
Yes, I had been a full-time sports writer for years and had been a freelancer in the Charlotte area. I lived in Shelby. And so I worked in upstate South Carolina as a full-time sports writer, and then I was a freelancer, and I wrote for the Panthers game day program for a couple years. I did a lot of cool things. And then my husband got transferred here to Greenville. So 99, I come into town. We had a six-month-old and a two-and-a-half-year-old. It was wild. And a month after we arrived, Hurricane Floyd hit, and we didn't even know where we lived yet. I mean, we learned the names of small towns by watching the flood coverage on, you know, WITN. But because of the fact that the Pirates were practicing down in Columbia and had to stay there through the week because of the flood, I got some freelance jobs from my old South Carolina friends who wanted me to tell them, you know, what was going on with East Carolina. And so that was the beginning of really getting to cover the football team as a freelance writer. And I've been doing it in some capacity ever since.
And here we are. You do a great job. For the folks that don't know, we'll talk about your writing career, but also Bonesville. It's one of my daily things that I have to do, my regimen of being a Pirate fan, member of the media, all that. I look up to you guys and admire all everybody on Bonesville.net. If you haven't had a chance, you're a Pirate fan, make sure you look and check out Bonesville.net.
I'm going to praise Danny Whitford a little bit. It's such a unique thing for someone to be that committed to a website like that for so many years. I've been working for that website for 13 and a half years, and it's existed longer than that, but he had to evacuate. He lives down at the Chocowinity area and had to evacuate. And so we had about 3 or 4 days where the site, the regular active contributors to the site, could not contribute because he couldn't upload. But we're already back. And there's just a commitment level to excellence that you don't always see in online content, and that's what's kept me hanging around. It's been wonderful.
Great thing. And with so we have the issue with Floyd, where the guys, I know that they didn't have, we've heard that story over and over again about how Kevin Monroe, different ones have told me they literally only had one outfit. And then we know that when the guys got back, there's some guys that lost everything in Floyd. Then we fast forward to 2016 with Matthew, where they play, ironically, in South Florida. They come back and they couldn't land in Raleigh. I believe they had to go to Richmond. They take a bus. I'm trying to give cliff notes, and they couldn't get on 95, so they were trying. They ended up being stuck at a, I think it was like a Super 8 or a motel. No offense, Super 8. If you want to be a sponsor, that would be great. But I think they were stuck for a while. And here we are, fast forward to now, and we have the latest controversy, which I won't spend a whole bunch of time on, but I wanted to ask your thoughts about EC Virginia Tech. We usually, it's a friendly rivalry, so to speak, and now it seems like that they've, kind of like a wrestling term, they've gone heel on us.
I just keep hoping someone's going to go, oh, no, this is a misunderstanding, because I think Virginia Tech's a class act. They always have been previously. I think if you don't live in a hurricane, you know, stricken place, a place that is a frequent hurricane visitor, you don't understand. And our team, our football team, has been trapped before and has been unable to return home or has been unable to have their normal game day routine a couple of times because of hurricanes. And so I completely understand the decision. That thing was barreling down on us in a way that was pretty terrifying, especially early in the week. So I'm really hoping that this isn't going to be a thing and they're just going to go, oh, yeah, no, of course you don't have to pay that money. You know, everything's fine. We understand. I mean, we don't understand because we live in Blacksburg, Virginia, but certainly you're gun shy and there's reason for it. You have, you know, evidence of past storms and the damage that they could have done both to students and their homes and also to your football program.
Well, I have to say that one of the things about me that people may not know on this podcast, believe it or not, because I don't bring the politics in it, but the political spin would be at this point damage control, some kind of, if you're a publicity person and you have a PR thing, wouldn't you give some kind of money to the relief fund or something? If you're Virginia Tech, say, you know what, we're going to give money to you guys because you guys helped us out in 2007 with that tragic event. I don't want to bring up negative things, but we were there for them, and I'm hoping in some way, like, you don't need the $250,000 or you don't have to pay the $500,000 for the breach of contract.
Yeah, I think that there's a way still to turn this around, and hopefully we won't need to be talking about it in a week. I'm very hopeful about that because I like that rivalry. I think it's been a good one for both teams, and they're a formidable opponent in every sport, and it's great when we can meet, and there won't be, you know, a rivalry's good, but these kinds of hard feelings carried, you know, forward, I don't think are really beneficial.
And one of the things that has been brought up on a little sidebar that drives me nuts as someone that's an East Carolina fan who believes that we are on the bubble, maybe not right there as a Power 5 school. I hate those terms anyway. But when the Virginia Tech fans, it's not all of them, but some of them are saying, we don't get anything out of playing East Carolina. You hear that same term with Carolina, NC State, all the ACC schools. And I'm full disclosure, I'm from the ACC country in the Triangle area, so I'm not an ACC hater. But that, as an East Carolina alum, fan, member of the media, it drives me crazy to hear we don't get anything out of playing East Carolina like we're a cupcake.
Yeah, no. Well, what, they don't get anything out of it because it terrifies most of those coaches. They've come in and been burned way too many times. And, you know, full disclosure, I am a Carolina graduate, but I have to say I also went there during the Dick Crum and the first two Mac Brown years. So 1-10, 1-10, 1-10, you know, I don't have any expectations of football glory as a Tar Heel graduate. So I was actually pretty happy to see what happened a couple weeks ago. I think it's great for the Pirates. I really want Scotty Moe to succeed, and so we'll see what happens from here. I mean, we've had to push pause a little bit and see what kind of momentum they're going to have still carrying over from that victory.
Let's move along to that very thing. I've been very happy with Coach Moe, especially over the last week, with the very fact of the way he's conducted himself, because I know that's got to be really tough as a competitor. Those of us that have played sports, if you've covered sports, you know, as a coach, player, member of the media, whatever, you want to be in that groove, that rhythm. It's got to be crazy not to have that game. You've practiced for that game a few days, and you're thinking you're going to play Virginia Tech. And I think that with all the criticism of Coach Moe from fans, media, whatever, I think that he's really done a nice job of really painting the picture of what it's like to be a coach. And these guys are like your sons, all these people that you have to take care of. They're he's actually – taking them under his wing, and I thought that the way he's handled himself over the last couple weeks with this particular incident shows true leadership.
I think so, too, and a lot of integrity, because he's been able to keep their safety and all the things that he knows that the players' parents would worry about at the forefront. And also, I believe, continue to prepare for the game this weekend in the way that, you know, I heard him yesterday say, we have stuck to our routine in every way possible. You know, every single, I know they're not at home, but everything they've done has been according to routine so that the pattern can, you know, continue to stay strong and they can be prepared. But as the mother of college-age kids, I appreciate the other side of that, where he is doing everything he can to make those mamas feel safe about where their boys are and what he's doing to take care of them.
It's very exciting. Let's talk about the South Florida game with the time we have, and then I want to get in your career with USF. They are actually, I looked at the schedule preparing for your interview and also with Jim Loud, and I'm telling you, Bethany, they have a string here that if we can somehow find a way to beat them this week, but if we don't beat them, they've got Connecticut in there. They've got a lot of games. They're UMass in there. They've got a lot of manageable games. I guess that's a nice way to say it. And if there's some way we could sneak up on them this week would be nice, because if the Pirates play like they did against Carolina, they can be competitive and win a lot of ball games this year.
No doubt, especially the way the defense played. I mean, defense, it was so nice to see, because I think they've been kind of chomping at the bit to be that kind of defense, very tenacious and very dominant. And I mean, they Carolina's offense is no great shakes right now, so I know that they haven't been truly challenged, but it was a start, and so it'll be exciting to see if they can continue to play the way they've played. And I think on our offensive side, we're still clicking the pieces together, but running back by committee is okay. Quarterback, we're working that out, and I think it worked. So can it continue? I don't know. We have good post-hurricane track record, and so we'll go with some superstition on that and hope for Miami in Raleigh, that kind of success.
That's true. I call that the Hurricane Floyd Bowl for sure. When you look at this year, I know that a lot of people put in pressure on Coach Mo with this year with having to get to 6 wins. Do you think there's with the Carolina win and maybe now with one less potential game, maybe you only play 11, would 5 wins be enough to keep its job? I'm going to put you on the spot.
I'm going to say yes, but I know people will disagree with me. But I do think it's going to depend on the quality of the wins and what we continue to see from him in terms of leadership, some of those intangibles that you and I just discussed. I believe that those are important, and, you know, that can sway some of the haters and the people that are really passionate about wanting to see him go elsewhere. So I'm hopeful.
Especially when you think about coaching, what a difference a week makes with East Carolina. You have Coach Mo going from North Carolina A&T and then getting a nice win against North Carolina. Look at Coach Ogeron over the summer with LSU, and then all of a sudden he gets his huge wins against Auburn this past week, and now they're moved up to number 6 in the polls, and it looks like a lot of sunshine in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, of course, where ECU, you know, the colors, they don't want that to be the only thing they have in common with a program like LSU. So you can look at that and go, how do we get there? But, you know, a few good wins, quality wins, can bring us back to a place we've been before. We know what that looks like. And, again, post-hurricane, you know, look at 99 and where we were and where we were able to stay in the polls. And it was really exciting, and I know that this program can get that back. It's going to come with a long recruiting road. You know, every year has got to get to a different level, and then also with the types of games that we were able to pull off against the Tar Heels.
It's going to be an interesting thing. I want to talk about the time we have remaining, because your career is awesome. I've enjoyed your work, and certainly some of the things I've been fascinated about your work is that you're not pigeonholed, and no offense to like the John Grishams of the world, because they've made a fortune, and if you can write crime novels and you can write novels and make a lot of money in the movies or whatever, hey, so be it. But your work is fascinating to me because you're going from all over the place, which I think is really cool. It shows that you're a great writer and that some people get like just certain like genres, just like music or anything else, they're great at that genre, but don't put them over in country music or don't put them over in rock music. And the same thing, I guess, can be true with writing. One of the things that was fascinating to me was your, first off, because I love to eat, that's probably why I'm on radio or podcasting, is your book on the Hardys, the early Hardy stuff. And as a kid that grew up originally in Durham and then a small town of Williamston and all the small towns in eastern North Carolina, ton of Hardys back in the day. I want to get your take on, if we get a little thumbnail sketch on some of the work you've done, because I want you to sell more books.
Oh, That's so nice of you. Thank you. Well, it's really just great storytelling. I mean, I love a great story. I love history. My favorite book I wrote was The History of the Dixie Classic. That book came out in 2011, and I just loved it because there were so many great stories embedded in that, the history of the integration of college basketball. And there was a point-shaving scandal that brought down the Dixie Classic that was fascinating. I mean, better than fiction. So that kind of thing I can just sink my teeth into. The history of Hardee's is similar. A lot of great stories, a lot of people that defy the odds to develop this huge corporation in Rocky Mount, North Carolina, and try to compete with McDonald's, which was growing. It was just fun. It was fun to interview the people that were there when it happened and to give them really what they deserved, which was a great oral history of a company that got its start here in the East. So that was a ton of fun. I wrote a book about a woman in Alabama who invented a special needs grocery cart because her daughter is a teenager with special needs and can't walk or talk, and she knew that other parents like her couldn't grocery shop. So she was just tenacious and creative and really amazing person. And so I think when there's a great person doing something to defy the odds and there's a wonderful story, it can be about food or it can be about grocery carts or it can be about sports, and I'm going to enjoy it. And the ghostwriting type books I've done have been people that say, hey, can you help me tell this story? I did that with Tony Collins is another one that I did ghostwriting with. And if it's a great story, I'm happy to do that. And it's just a real treat because sometimes people don't know how to bring a book into the world, and I'm able to help that happen and help them tell the story. And it's just, it's been so much fun. I mean, I've learned a lot. I always say I can talk for 5 minutes about anything at a party. So I may not specialize in any one thing, but I have lots of things I've written about over the years that have been just really fun to you know, bring to light and to let other people in on, you know, some great stories. Sports is my favorite. I would stick with sports books, but there's some really great other ones that people will come to me and I'm happy to help tell.
And we'll have to get that information. I know there are a lot of people that may be interested in their life story or memoirs or something that. The one book that comes to mind, a man that was very special to me, when I was first in broadcasting, working with Henry Hinton, the very first interview that Keith LeClair ever did was with us, with our radio station, with Henry Hinton at, believe it or not, the Denny's on Memorial Drive. Was the very first interview that he did for East Carolina with his at his career. And hearing him talk about Omaha and about that, just the fact that being in that booth at Denny's right near him talking about baseball, I wanted to play for him even though I didn't have the talent to play Division I, much less maybe Division III baseball. But he had a passion in him, and to see what happened was so tragic for him personally, but for the program as well, for baseball. Now that we have Cliff Godwin, it seems to be way back on track. But coaching third, I know that the Keith LeClair story, we had a gentleman on, Brian McCain, that works with Coach Godwin. He talked about getting your book. I just wanted to pass this along to you. And if you get a chance, listen to the interview. But he talks about getting that book, reading, and he had tears on his eyes reading that story on the plane back home to him. I think he lives in Texas, but I just want to pass that along to you because I was interviewing him, and it really, I thought about you and that book, and I know that it had to be very emotional writing the book, and for just thinking about it right now, it just brings chill bumps to me.
Yeah, there were so many times during that research process when I interviewed, you know, grown men and who broke down in tears just remembering and trying to express what Coach LeClair had meant in their lives. And it was 3 years after his death. I mean, if we had done it within the first year, I'm not sure we could have gotten through that because people were, it was so raw. It was still raw. We sold that book. The book launched during the LeClair Classic weekend in 2010. So it was early March. I remember it was freezing for baseball. I kept running my hands under warm water in the stadium trying to get them not numb. But we were selling books all weekend there, and I had people who'd come up to the table on Friday and bought the book, and then they came back on Saturday or Sunday, and they had read it already. Wow. And said, I had, you know, grown men who looked like they just stepped off a Harley who said, can I give you a hug? Because the story meant so much to them. So for me, it was the first time I was able to see that, because a book means so much. I mean, I'd written articles, but that was my first book. And that a book can mean something to somebody that you can't even express, and that you're able to be part of that in their lives. And for the Pirate Nation, because I live here and I'm part of this community, it meant more than anything to be able to do that for people. It was a gift. The LeClair family was amazing, and so many friends and family who opened up their lives and their memories. That's hard. But I think what we were able to produce was something that was really meaningful to so many. And I also had a lot of women come up and say, my husband's never read a whole book before. So I felt like I also contributed to the literacy rate of these guys who maybe just read articles or websites. Nothing wrong with reading websites or listening to podcasts, but, you know, read some books too.
That's right, or audiobooks for sure. How can people get your books? Amazon.com?
Amazon's the best place to go, yes. I mean, occasionally we've got a few outlets here. UBE always has the Coach LeClaire book, and so that's a great way to do that as well. And if anyone knows me, you can contact me. I usually have some at my house.
Well, Bethany, I know you're busy. I appreciate you so much for your time. It has been fun to meet you, and look forward to cover the Pirates with you on the practice fields.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks for what you're doing. I'm excited to be part of the podcast.
Fan of Bethany, thank you so much, Bethany, for being with us. She's going to actually, I know, be on with us from time to time throughout on the course of the year, and I know she was busy, so appreciate her very much. And I'm a huge fan of her work, and she, because of I said that in the interview, because of her work with she wrote a story about the beginning days of Hardee's. How did that start? The history of the Super Bowl. You have her favorite book, as she mentioned there in the interview with. About the Dixie Classic, which she wrote in 2011. There's all kinds of cool stuff from Bethany. Again, you can find her columns, which is Bethany, should say, the Bradshaw Beat, and that's every week on Bonesville.net. Well, you know, one of my favorite things, guys, is our Great Pirate, and I want to give a shout-out to Philip Wood. He gave me the idea to call the segment Great Pirates from the past because he called me a great pirate for being a member of the Pirate Club and our support of the program and everything for all three of us, by the way. And I felt like we should call it that. And we have a great pirate. And Jeff, we talked to him about him earlier, but talk about Jeff Barber there, Bubba.
Yeah, Jeff Barber, like I said earlier, that's what he's an ECU alum. That's where he got his start in athletic administration, really, at ECU, as far as being involved with the Pirate Club, decided to go away from ECU he had earned a promotion. He got the job at Furman leading the Paladin Club and then moved on from there to the University of South Carolina with the Gamecock Club. And, from there, went on up to Lynchburg and did a tremendous job there improving their facilities and readying them for the move to the FBS Independence. And I'm sure the Sun Belt would like to have Liberty. Jeff did a tremendous job, and now he's going to do the same down at Charleston Southern.
All right, let's go to that interview with Jeff Barber, the great pirate. Let's go to him right now.
Here on the Sports Objective Podcast, and now with us, the athletic director at Charleston Southern, and that is Jeff Barber. Jeff, thank you so much. An honor to have you on our show. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I appreciate being asked, and it's an honor for me to talk with you this morning.
Absolutely. We wanted to talk about the new gig now at Charleston Southern. I was very happy when I heard the news that you took over at Charleston Southern as the Director of Athletics, the AD. How are things going so far?
You know what, Dave? They're going really good. I've learned in life that jobs and everything, it's all about people, and they are wonderful people here, and there's a whole lot of work to do, I can promise you, and it seems like every day the pile gets larger and it stacks up, but that's okay with me. You know, I've told people before, I'm an East Carolina bred, grew up in Greenville, of course, went to East Carolina, and I know what it means to fight, and I like being in a situation where people say you can't do things and it can't get done, and it's a challenge to me. So we certainly have that opportunity here at Charleston Southern. We've got a lot to do, but, you know, happy to make progress. Already made progress over the last 2 months, and you know, got some good things and laying some good foundational pieces to build this program to be the very best that we can be.
And Jeff, I wanted to ask that question about building the program. You have a lot of experience of that. We'll talk about that at Liberty, and I wanted to ask about Charleston Southern. Before you took the job, and now that you're on the job, what are the changes? What are things that you guys are going to do and build the program?
Well, I would say this, Dave. We always start with academics. I think, you know, the reason there are colleges and universities and athletic departments and all is obvious, and that's to graduate student athletes and give them an opportunity to get a quality education and then go on to life as they graduate and make a positive difference in their communities and in their lives. So, we're making some changes with academics. We've secured bigger study hall space, including computer room, and we brought on actually a new academic person. So we're really shoring up our academic areas. You know, one of the things I believe in is little things make a big difference, and they add up over time. So we're doing a lot of foundational pieces with getting things established that will help us long term. Give you a good example, I guess, is I just got back to the office from a 55 plus living community that's just down the street from the university, and I went over there and spoke to about 30 or 40 people to begin an ambassador program here, where we have volunteers coming in and helping out with football games and basketball games and doing customer service things. And, you know, it'll build over time. We did that at Liberty and had 4 or 5 the first year. By the time I left, we had probably 45. So we did it at South Carolina, when I was there, and it's a great program. We're doing things like establishing principles that are going to be good for us long term, whether it's fundraising principles. You know, people want to know fundraiser, and fundraising comes in a lot of different ways, as you probably know, but having a good system in place that encourages people to give and based on their football seats, basketball seats, parking passes, and all that. So we're doing that. We're working on that new program to put in place soon. You know what? This interview is not long enough, really, to talk about all the things that we're doing. It's just, I mean, it's kind of it's a little overwhelming at sometimes, but we're just trying to emulate the Power Five schools, the East Carolinas of the day, you know, to run things, do things the right way here. You know, I'm a guy that always wants wherever I'm working to be the best they can be. So, you know, we're looking at everything. We're looking at adding hardwiring the concession stands to give us more outlets for sales for concessions. So there's just so many things like that. International taxes, which has hurt us, and TOEFL scores, which you may not know what it is, but there are things that affect international recruiting, and there are certain sports, be it track, be it tennis, be it golf, whatever. International, there's a big international flavor. And our coaches have been handicapped. So I look at my job, I'll just kind of paraphrase and say, I look at my job as an AD is to take away obstacles and excuses. Obstacles for our coaches. Why can't you win this league? What are your obstacles? And what for fans, the excuses not to come to games, and whether concessions line along, well, guess what? You put in more points of sale, you know, things like that. So my job is to take away excuses, take away obstacles from our staff, our coaches, our fans, the student body, so that we can put out a great product that they're going to be proud of and want to be a part of. And once that happens, this thing will take off, and that's just the way it works. And so we've just got, you know, probably 150 different things we're doing right now, you know, just exactly what I said, just putting pieces in place that are going to change the culture of this program.
Can you talk about, I know something that East Carolina, a lot of people like myself love facilities and want to see new things. There's a lot of great things going on in East Carolina academically with the buildings, and hopefully we can get the same thing for athletics. Can you, speaking to that, at Charleston Southern, what facilities are you guys maybe already building or are going to, in the future, what do you want to build there at Charleston Southern?
I actually, just for starters, we're building a new basketball arena. I've got lunch, actually, with the architect coming in from Greenville, South Carolina, at noon today. He's coming in, and we're going to be going through the plans and whatever. So we're in the process. It's already started. It's actually started several years ago. They just haven't made too much progress. We're bringing in a company that does naming rights because they're the world's leader in naming rights. So I know the guy, the president of the company, and I've talked to him, and they're coming in here in a couple of weeks to meet with the new president and the senior leadership on it to talk about naming rights and the opportunities we have to tie to that. So we're doing that. That's probably the biggest one right now. I'm already beginning making plans for expansion of football, and then we have a small stadium. You know, it's very poor. We're doing things to it now. We're adding flags. We're adding 54 palm trees. We're adding a lot of things to it. We're painting seats purple and Vegas gold, and, you know, it's going to be a lot nicer, but we still have a tremendous long way to go. But we're already not planting palm trees in certain areas because I know where I want to expand it in the next 2 to 3 years. So football stadium expansion is part of it. We're actually building some new football offices, football coaches' offices and meeting rooms that's starting in January. We just got that started. So that's part of it. We're working with the other facilities. We actually got Musco Lighting right now putting in lights at softball. We're getting new dirt for the baseball infield. I love baseball and baseball guy in many ways. And when I met with our coach a month ago and I said, what's your obstacles from winning this league? He said, we need new dirt. I immediately went down the hall, found a development guy, and we put a plan together to raise about $30,000 to put the best dirt you can buy in. So we're kind of piecemealing everything right now and doing a lot of different things to all the facilities. I like to think of myself as a comprehensive AD. I don't just think about football. I don't just think about basketball or maybe the larger sports, but I care about all of them, David, and I'm just really trying to find different ways of doing that. I've got somebody coming in to paint the softball scoreboard. It's faded out, and I don't like that. We need it to look nice, so we're adding palm trees around the softball scoreboard. So a lot of little things like that we'll continue to do until we can put ourselves in a position financially that we can make some big moves. The arena is pretty much, you know, we got to figure some things out, but we'll get that done. But facilities, I believe, are a silent statement of what you think about your athletics program, and it tells you who you are and who you want to be. And it's something that I'm always, you know, a big facility guy, and I'm always trying to make every one of them. When I was at Liberty, we had 20 sports, and every year I tried to do at least one thing at every facility. And, of course, some are bigger than others to make it a better facility than it was the year before.
I know that my parents taught me leave things better than, in fact, my dad said that on the cruise we just went on, told my children leave things better than you found before. As far as Liberty goes, I know you did a lot with the program. Can you talk about that, the things you did at Liberty?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I inherited a program very similar to where I am right now, to be honest with you, David. Facilities were poor. We had a small staff. We actually have more staff here now than we did at Liberty. But when I got to Liberty, including head coaches, including everybody in the department, we had 55. And when I left, we had 165. So over 10 plus years, we had added over 100 employees. Our athletic budget grew from $12 million a year to $40 million a year.
Wow.
Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, you know, I came to Liberty at a good time when the online money started going kicking in. I didn't have an open checkbook to do anything I wanted. There were still procedures in place and things I couldn't do and I wanted to do, but we did have some big donors and went after big money. We got that. And again, we put policies in place. I'll give you a good example. It was a 12,000 seat stadium when I got there, which we would love to have here right now, but to be honest with you, but there was no suites and a very small press box. So I brought in the first year, one of these mobile suites, and they're the kinds that the PGA Tour uses. And so we actually sold them for $36,000. I don't know what East Carolina is going to sell their suites at, but $36,000. And in the first year, we had six people that bought them. We ended up having about 10 or 11. And it was a precursor to adding to the stadium an upper deck and a new press tower with 18 suites. And we got $25,000 a year for those. But it was just a precursor to that. So facilities and everything, we were very basic, very very bad, and we just continued to build it over time. So facilities got to be great, and again, we had online money to help us do that. But we built beautiful facilities, and I'm a guy that when I do something, I want to check with the best schools ever and the people doing it the best way and try to emulate and take things from those schools. So when I hired Doc Richardson as our softball coach, you know, we got on a plane and we flew to some of the top programs around the country and looked at their stadiums and walked them with the coach. I walked with her through those and asking the coaches and the people that were involved in the building, what do you like about this stadium? What don't you like? And put together a stadium at Liberty that we've been told it may be the best in the world. In fact, we're actually contacted by the World Cup of Softball about bringing the World Cup to Lynchburg, Virginia, of all things.
Wow.
We had the Olympic coaches there, and they said, we've never seen a stadium this good. And so, you know, that was a big part of it. So we built the facilities. We built personnel. And I tell you, I told somebody this the other day, the thing that made that I like best about it is we grew the department and we grew and, you know, we won 83 conference championships in 10 years. We won the all sports trophy, I think 7 out of the 10 years. We always were battling with Coastal and they do a good job there as well. But anyway, we were able to build those things, David, without compromising who we are, without stepping on people, without breaking relationships or fracturing relationships with people. We did it in a way that we built it in a cohesive spirit with the faculty, with donors, with alumni, and it was done the right way. And, you know, I believe in doing things the right way, and you just keep doing things the right way, and good things happen. So that's kind of what happened. And we took that program. It was a very low-level FCS program that in 06, and by 2012, as Liberty did a feasibility study to move up to FBS football. We're told by the committee of the folks that did it that we're the most prepared FCS program that they've ever seen. And that was five years before the offer ever came from the NCAA. And we had had a meeting on campus with some upper-level people a few months before I was let go, and I don't mind talking about that. It's okay. But anyway, so we had the NCAA senior staff in April of the year. I was let go in November, but we had them in, and they said we're just blown away by the posture and the position of this program, and you're so well suited for FBS football. And in the group of five, I think, David, there's 62 schools, and we had the 16th largest budget, and we're told the best facilities, and you know, on and on and on. So it was fun to do. I look at myself as an AD. I like building things. I don't want to just go somewhere and just sit and sustain. I'm not happy doing that. I don't feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. So we were able to build things, you know, the right way at Liberty, and in the right, you know, there's a pattern to doing that. You got to take care of academics and compliance first, and you make decisions based on the entire department, not just one sport necessarily. Sometimes you do, of course, but you're trying to look out for the entire department as you build this thing, and it touches all the athletes and all the sports. So it was a fun thing to go through. It was a model that I'm trying to emulate here at Charleston Southern now, and it takes time, but I'm looking forward to the process.
And before we let you go, I know you've got a meeting coming up, but I wanted to appreciate your time so much. I wanted to ask about your time in Greenville. A lot of us are from Eastern North Carolina, close by to Greenville, but you actually grew up in Greenville. You go to East Carolina. You have work at East Carolina. Can you talk about Greenville and your time at ECU?
Well, I don't have enough time to tell you how much I love it and how it's in my blood. I mean, I grew up there, and I can talk forever. It means the world to me. It's my home. It's my mom still has a home there. Actually, just sold it. She's up in age now. But I've got two brothers that are there, it's just home for me. It's home. It's Parker's Barbecue, and it's going over to Little Washington and eating hot dogs, and it's going over down to Beaufort, and it's Atlantic Beach, and it's Emerald Isle, and it's Jacksonville, being high school and playing basketball in New Bern, and running into people now from Eastern North Carolina, and just, you know, it's home for me, and it's where I'm comfortable. It's where I love more than anywhere else. It's always been that way to me, and I'm a guy that'll fight for East Carolina, you know, even as I've been away. And I was so appreciative of Dave Hart in 91 when he encouraged me to go get other experiences, and I've missed it ever since. But at the same time, I've learned so much, you know, being in the SEC 10 years and watching the programs and trying to emulate those programs. And, you know, but in the back of my heart, there's always East Carolina, and it's the foundation of who I am as a person and my spirit. You know, I've got a pirate spirit, and I'm having to use that here. Had to use it at Liberty. I've got to use it here. So it's home. I've got tons of friends there that are still there, and I still follow the program to the best I can. And I'll always be a pirate, and I will always bleed purple, and doesn't mean you can't be somewhere else and love that place too. But I'm just an East Carolina guy. I understand the culture. I understand the, you know, what we deal with on the state level and the battles. You know, interesting things. Dave had me go to NC State and deliver a letter to Jim Valvano, and I'll probably mess this up, Dick Sheridan, and the president of the school when that unfortunate event happened in '87 with the goalpost. And you know, all those things. I remember walking into the football coaches meeting at NC State and handing them the letter with our official response from East Carolina. And all those kind of things, they just cement who you are as a pirate and as an East Carolina guy. And I get it. I know what it's all about. I pull for them. I'd love for them to go undefeated this year. Joe Dooley's a great friend. I'm so glad. That was a great move to bring him on board. I'm excited about it. So, you know what? It's just who I am, David. It's just, you know, you can't get away from your roots, and my roots took place there, and I grew up there, and it's just home to me and a very, very special place.
Jeff, it's about pirates supporting pirates, right?
I love it, man. I love it. Yep, I remember those bumper stickers, and one little pirate story about me you may not know. When I first got there, I was actually dressed up as the pirate mascot, and I stood out on Greenville Boulevard at the front of the Jiffy Lube. It was a grand opening of the Jiffy Lube. And I was actually Petey the Pirate for about 4 hours. I think I lost about 15 pounds. We're all pirates, and it's a wonderful place. And I wish Dr. Staten and everybody nothing but the best, and all you guys. So make us proud.
Well, you know, Kyle, I want to bring you in and Bubba on this. We're getting ready to wrap up this podcast, but I wanted to talk about the elephant in the room. I've just got to talk about it. It's like one of those things where I'm dying to talk about it, and I've waited a whole podcast. So save the best for last. For me, there's with everything going on with that we were talking about earlier about the 80s situation. I'm sorry, excuse me, about the Virginia Tech controversy and all that. David Glenn had a great take about it's about relationships, and David Glenn is actually his son Anthony goes to ECU. So for all the people that think that he hates ECU, I think it's hilarious, and he's just like an ACC homer when he actually loves ECU. But anyway, he brought up the fact that about building relation or about relationships, and I think it's true. You know, if you look at when we had Terry Holland, he knew everybody, and he was able to build relationships. He was able to do like all kinds of games and different things. He got us in the American Conference, and it's because of relationships. And that's my concern now is the AD situation. And Kyle, I'm going to bring you in first. What is your take on it before we go? I want to get maybe a minute or two each for you and Bubba, and we'll wrap this thing up.
Take on the AD situation. We need one. I like Dave Hart. I've said it before. I'll say it again. If Dave Hart wants to take the job and be our athletic director for 2 to 3 years, or longer, then do it. If not, then Dave Hart's primary responsibility should be finding the next athletic director.
Correct.
Just call Scott Weatherby up in Eastern Michigan and get him down here. It's silly we don't have an athletic director, and it just goes back to how incompetent our chancellor is. Cecil, are you listening? There should be an AD in place already, and hopefully Dave Hart decides he wants the job.
I hope that's the case. Bubba, what do you think?
I'd say, like Kyle said, ideally we'd already have that man in place, be it Dave Hart or someone else. But of course, I'm going to say we don't know all the circumstances. You would think that there would have been enough time to have completed the deep dive, but maybe not. And, maybe there are legitimate reasons to have extended Dave Hart the way we have through mid-December. And, we'll see. I would be totally fine with him staying on as our AD for 2 to 3 years or longer, as Kyle said, but, if that's not the case, then I think he does need to play a significant role in helping land whoever our permanent AD is going to be. And there's certainly no shortage of viable options. I mean, you look at Scott Weatherby up in Eastern Michigan. I would certainly love that hire. You look at Jeff Barber down at Charleston Southern. I would love that hire. And there are several others out there as well.
That's right, and we'll give you a hint. You'll be able to hear them right here on this podcast. I'm just going to say that right now. So they are all going to be right here. I can, like Justin Wilson, the cook chef, used to say, I guarantee. So I can guarantee you that
we've got Jeff Barber on today, and Scott Weatherby will be on in the future, and we got
next
got
week.
Others.
Yeah. Jeff was on this week, and Scott Weatherby's on next week. So if you like the whole AD situation, then listen to them, and they're great pirates, and also we can find out about the past and obviously find out what they're doing now. It's kind of like that, and you never know if they're going to be, you know, they've been mentioned, but we don't know, and they're doing great jobs at where they are. But I want to leave you guys with this. I heard a rumor, so I'm not going to say where I heard it from to protect the source. It is true what I heard, as far as somebody told me, I'm not making this up, that Dave Hart, that we may see they're trying to convince him to sign a 2-year deal, and that we would hear something in December. I don't know if that's true. So again, I always preface things by rumor. It's a fact. It's my opinion. It's speculation on my part, whatever. But this is certainly a rumor, and I didn't know if you guys had heard anything about that.
I've heard that bandied about for a while, that we've offered him a contract and trying to get him to sign it. And I would say without a doubt, we'll hear something in December. Either he's going to sign some kind of contract or he's going to be gone.
Yeah.
So, I, I, uh, Yeah, I believe that's a pretty safe bet that something will happen in December. You can't extend him a third time.
No, that would be really amateurish. And I thought that they would. I told you guys before I went on the cruise, I thought the breaking news would be late August we would find out that he was going to be our next AD, or he was going to hire the next AD. Instead, it was just an extension. So, Bubba, what do you think?
No, as far as the rumor, I would be, like I said a moment ago, I'd be fine with that for sure. And I have heard that rumor. I've talked to a couple people who have some very good connections inside ECU athletics, and I've heard that as well. I don't know for sure. Yeah.
And we've talked to different. You and I don't have the same sources, so it's funny how. And Kyle has different sources as well, so it's funny how that we're hearing not exactly the same thing, but yet it's really when it comes down to it, we'll see what December looks like. That would be 6 months, and I mean, you know, that would be done, and then you're looking at, well, actually, that would be 9 months, wouldn't it, guys? From the time that he got hired, so somewhere around there. But we definitely need to make a decision, and I know, Bubba, you're hearing things, I'm hearing things, and Kyle's hearing things, and so unless we knew that it was true, then obviously we're not going to say it's true unless we definitely know, and we definitely have that integrity, and when it comes to reporting things and finding out things, and I appreciate all the people listening. It means a lot, Bubba, right? We're going to wrap this thing up because we've been talking a long time and a long podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say I'll leave the listeners with a couple things. One, hope Scotty Moe and the Pirates can make me and all three of us eat some crow this weekend, keep things rolling, and get that upset win down at USF, and let's come back to Dowdy Ficklin here in about a week and a half and be ready to take care of business and have a 3-1 September. And the second thing I'm wanting to leave our listeners with is just make sure you follow us on our social media accounts at TheSportsOBJ on Twitter. Make sure you turn on your notifications that way when we put out a new podcast, that's what you know when it's posted and you can check it out. Tremendous content headed your way. And on Instagram, it's at The Sports Objective. And then make sure you like us on Facebook and follow our YouTube channel. Subscribe to that as well.
All right, Kyle, any final thoughts?
I just want to echo what Bubba said. Hopefully football team will go down and get a W this weekend and pull off the big upset. Follow us on Facebook, like us on Twitter. No, do the other thing. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. And do whatever you do with Instagram. I don't know what you do there. And subscribe to our YouTube. And this has been the longest podcast in the history of the world to record. It's over now. And we go Pirates. And, yeah, that's all we got.
Feels like my last root canal. But, hey, no, I'm kidding. I'm actually kidding. There's a lot of great guests. I'm joking. And I just want to send out on a serious note before we leave, my hearts and prayers go out to Trayvon Brown and his family, and let's support them any way we can. And all, not only them, they're one of many examples of people hurting right now. Sending you a lot of love in East North Carolina. If it's North Carolina or South Carolina, we love you. And certainly you're going to be bounced back strong. For Kyle from LaGrange, Barber, and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.